Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabi Talk Radio, the first edition of 2017, new year, new pod, same podcast, really. With me on this episode, our very first episode of the year, we have Thaxos.
Hey.
Misha Kitty.
Hello, everyone.
Frost.
Hey.
Dark Hero.
Hello.
And we have our newest member of the podcast, our new producer, the guy who is going to be doing most of the work for me, so I don't have to do it ever again. We have Fen Rule.
Hey, everyone.
Yay, welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
Everybody, round of slow claps.
No, there. We'll make Fen Rule add that in post.
But yeah, again, welcome, Fen Rule. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing most of the work for me. It's great.
I'm glad to be here.
You will soon realize how fun it is to edit one of these. it's honestly not that bad. It's just time consuming.
But
actually, we've all agreed to be on our best behavior for him tonight.
We did.
I appreciate it.
We are on the bestest of behaviors.
Right.
But we'll start in with Fen Rule here. So, because this is your first time on the podcast, period. What got you into the Mercs? How long have you been with us?
I've been a forum member since October 2014. I just started a new job and I was going to take a mini vacation before I got started. And I found out about the clan through Dallas Comic Con. And it was like, I wanted to do 501st or costume for a while. I just started with general cosplay. And then I found out, so it's like, oh, dude, I love Boba Fett. And these guys do their own custom stuff, so I might as well just go with that. It took me about 2 years. It actually took me exactly 2 years and 7 days to get my membership from joining on the forums. But I'm very happy with where it is, and I'm very happy to be part of the group.
That's lovely. We're glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Welcome. I'm no longer the FNG guy.
Right?
Exactly.
That was fast.
Yeah, that was honest. That was one of the shorter terms someone's had. Not the shortest, but one of the shorter.
Wasn't Misha one for like a year and a half?
Yeah. Right?
Yes. Well, yeah, I was.
Probably.
For like ever. Forever and ever. I probably still am, really. I'm just, you know, I'm just here.
And still the only girl currently on the podcast. Not our first girl, but the only.
Yay, Lady Mercs represent. Hooray!
If we'd gotten any Lady Merc applications on the producer job, we would have definitely considered them.
Absolutely.
But we got, what, two?
We got a few. We did get a few. We had a pair of really, really standout ones. Fen Rule was the guy we ended up choosing, obviously. But we had a lot of good response. I had a pretty good response out of unofficial members.
It was two or three we whittled it down to, right?
But a fair amount of unofficial members, you know.
I like that this is the part of the podcast where we have to reaffirm the fact that if there had been women that were qualified, we would have taken them. So that everyone knows that.
No, that's an encouragement that we'd like them to also apply if they were, you know, if they were on the fence about it. Please do apply.
It's true. Moose is true.
Yeah. It's been brought up in other discussions at the clan officer level before, and it's kind of one of the things where it's like, well, we would if we could choose any, but none apply here. You know, it's.
But that being said, we have a fair number of clans have ladies as officers or Alarads. Especially we just had a bunch of elections. There are a bunch of new ones in right now. A couple of our RCs, at least Dexa is a lady.
I was about to say, I think Dexa is the longest running. Female, like clan officer / RC that we've ever had.
Mm.
And what, Arden is the longest running counselor?
No, not anymore. She was a counselor for a very long time, but I don't know if she still would hold that record because a lot of our council folks have been in there for some time now, just because they're good at their jobs.
Actually, only two of them have been in for a while. The council rotates out pretty quick, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You really.
I've been in for what feels like an eternity, but it's only been 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that. Like I've only been this year.
It would depend on when you join the Mercs. For some people, I've been in there the entire time they've known the Mercs.
Oh yeah.
For Eric, I've barely been there at all.
Well, and then I was about to say it's like there's a couple people. Old Vart still on the council, or
is he still the Alarad?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
and yeah, he's still on there, and he's been on there for quite some time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not from the original pack of four, but he is, like, he's in the first run, so he's probably the longest running.
Yeah, and he was our original Allred here in Florida, and he went on to become the Olor there.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about the, as much as we're sidetracking, I'll keep it brief. That's the interesting thing about the council is that it both can shift around a whole lot, or you can, if you find the right person, you can really just stick with one person, and you get the reliability of having one person doing the job. There was a time when we went through, I don't know, three different personnel officers in the span of a year and a half.
That was
a little rough.
That jumps.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it, honestly, you don't need to apologize, Sean. I mean, Thaxos, I don't know if we're supposed to be revealing our names, but you don't need to. Oh, no, people will hunt you now.
Who are you people?
They'll show up at your house in the Great White North. But I think it's good to talk about the council. I know that when I first started, I was lucky enough to meet Point of Origin and a couple of other council people at Celebration, which was my first the last Celebration in Orlando, which was my first Merc event. And so I got to meet the council people right offhand and see that they were, you know, ordinary people, really nice guys, and really super helpful.
Yes, and one of them is actually a moose, cleverly disguised as a
Canadian. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But I think it's great to talk about the council and help our members and both official and recruits, auxiliary, wherever you're at. I think it's great to be able to have that conversation so folks get a better idea of how we work.
And that actually brings up a good point. Actually, one of the questions that I got recently via PM was someone asking a question for the podcast. We'll get to that towards the end when we usually do our Ask the People sort of segment. But they were surprised that I answered. They're like, oh wow, the high ups sort of like actually.
Are you a high up?
Well, that's the funny thing. I'm not.
Or now.
I mean,
people are always surprised when I answer too. I'm like, well, duh. I mean, I don't mean that in any way, but like, of course I answer. I am here to serve you.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you sent me a message. What did you expect? But and honestly, that's pretty true of all of anybody. Mm-hmm. Ever.
It may take us a little while. I mean, you all have heard me say this on the podcast before, and I will keep saying it. Please keep in mind that everyone is a volunteer. So, you know, if we have life stuff going on, if we get sick, if we are out of town, you know, you and people
we
may
grow
not
old, weary.
People may not be decide to go on a 10-day cleanse. You know, that's just may not be answering voicemails. I mean, PMs. Ooh. But
I feel like you would be answering more PMs if you were on a 10-day cleanse because you're trapped and you've got your phone.
just hanging right. out.
I feel like you answer more PMs.
We do. I think everybody's really good about answering, and even the people on the podcast, we're here. So if you have something you want to say to us, please let us know. We love feedback.
Mm.
There's also a thread created for every episode that you can comment about it more.
Yeah,
we have a couple people that comment on that every time, but
it's
good to see more people commenting and giving us some feedback so we can better tailor the podcast to what they want to hear, and that'll be part of what Federal works on to bring it all back around again.
Giving your feedback, I crave it.
Delegation, awesome.
It sure is. As this is the first year that I've actually been able to delegate. I mean, I've always had you guys as the podcast team, but I actually, again, I'm not one of the high ups, but I am the guy in charge of all of the club's social media. So if you have a question about Facebook or Twitter, I'm your guy. But yeah, everyone, I actually have a team for Facebook now, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it great when you make a team?
Yep. And that's just the same thing in PR as the PRXO. I mean, for a while, it was just me and Saz and Crow working on a lot of the PR, everything. And we finally got a couple, I mean, we had a couple of other people helping out, but we did the majority of it. And like Battle Cry, for a while there, I was writing every article. Shh, don't tell anyone. It was fun because I got to Skype people and then furiously like type what they were saying. But we brought in new people and we brought in a new team, and oh my goodness, like the PR team now, they're so amazing. And we have some incredible things coming to you for Celebration from the PR team, and you'll be seeing social media there live too. So we're very excited to bring that to you.
I do have a phone. Yeah.
Is that, would that, what's next? That's, we actually have an agenda for this episode, so.
Well, we always have agendas.
Fair, we usually do. We usually
that's true.
It, but we this time we're actually having some really nice segues.
I know. I was going to say, is it okay? May I, New Boston, yeah. May I yeah. segue into Celebration?
Yeah, this is, we can reorder things a little bit. So yeah, we have a couple notes about C8, as we're still calling it. Officially, it is Celebration Orlando, even though it's like the fourth Celebration Orlando, technically, but I digress. Yeah, Misha
is
has.
Is it the fourth? Is it?
I'm trying to remember because, I mean, it's at the very
There's at least two.
Three. Because C5 was in Orlando, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then C6 definitely was.
They all started that blur together.
Let's see, the ones I went to were C4 and 5, which I think were both in Orlando, and then C6.
I thought
was C4
was LA.
C7 was Anaheim. C6 was.
Orlando. So there were two back-to-back Orlando, and that must have been 6 and 5. And those were the ones I did.
6 and 5 were Orlando, yeah. 4, I'm pretty sure, was L.A., wasn't it?
I don't know.
Mine was 6 then.
Yeah, my first one was 6 as well. That was my first Celebration. Yeah. Definitely first one as an OM, but that was my first one.
Yes, so. Celebration 4 was L.A., not that I went. I started
okay.
Celebration
5. And then, what was it? C2 was...
Oh, I have no idea.
Well, it wasn't I'm trying to remember. Wasn't the first Celebration just in, like, somebody's backyard?
No, probably.
One of them was up in Indianapolis. I know that much, but I don't know
oh, really?
It was.
That was probably C2.
Very small thing at that point. But anyway.
C1 was in Denver, and then C2 and C3.
Are you guys
C4
ready for me
like,
to talk
oh,
yet, or what? Are we doing this?
Yes.
That's a lady speak.
But yeah, so what's... what do you...
Payback, right, for every time I lead us astray.
What does PR have in store for Celebration, Misha?
Nothing.
That's not true. We have things. I don't know for sure whether or not I'm allowed to really announce it yet, but I can say that we have some pretty cool stuff. We will, if you can't make it to Celebration, we now have the capability to make you feel like you were there. So we will definitely be doing some live feeds. We will definitely be bringing you live to some of our special events. We're hoping to go live from the bash, and we have a couple of special goodies that the PR team is working on as we speak, things that we've never had at Celebrations before that we will have at this one, hopefully, provided we can get it printed. So we're looking forward to making that happen as well. But since I'm in the home base here in sunny Orlando, Florida, where those of you that are hearing this and listening to this in the cold, frozen north, it was, 73 today, and I had to wear a hoodie because it was cold. So that's what you get to look forward to, beautiful, warm, sunny weather. And we're doing a lot. I got to go to the first Celebration build. It was, 2 weekends ago. Corey and Ken Snaps hosted it at their house, and it was fantastic. We had about 15 BBC members and recruits and their families show up, and I have to tell you guys, you're going to be really, really proud of the booth that is being planned, provided, we get it done in time.
Oh, you'll get it done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that. That was the threat. It's amazing. Ken and his crew have done such a good job kind of planning it out, and Brian, our podcast member who is not here currently, is designing some artwork for it that's going to be really special, and the whole point of it is for it to be an immersive experience, and I think that this will be the type of setting that you'll be able to look at and just say, man, I'm proud to be a Merc, and we're really excited to bring that. You may not know, but it does actually take money to do that. So we do have opportunities for sponsorship and also for donations if you're a builder or if you happen to have some cash laying around, feel free to PM me on the forums. I can send you a sponsorship packet. Some of you all have companies or know a company that might want to sponsor part of the booth or a bash or one of the elements in the booth. We actually, this is the first time this year that we've had a solid sponsorship packet all put together, designed and ready to go. So we're really excited to do that as well. And then finally, I just want to chime in. If you haven't already gotten your bash tickets, get them. They are in the shop, and they're for sale. Really pretty. We've kept the price. Corey Snaps puts on the bash, and her biggest concern, really, about the bash is making it affordable for everyone to go. So she's really worked hard to keep that price low without sacrificing anything cool. So we're looking forward to having a batch, and ours really is that opportunity to get together, meet the people that maybe you've heard on the podcast or you've seen on Facebook, or you know, so-and-so whose kit is really awesome and you've never, you know, you've seen pictures of them in their kit, but maybe you've never gotten to hang out with them. Well, the bash is the opportunity for you to do that. And we're really excited to bring that kind of fun family atmosphere that the Mercs is known for into a big giant room where everyone can hang out and enjoy the evening. Also, I think the only other...
That bash ticket does include a full dinner and a bunch of swag and a...
Oh. I don't know if it's dinner or hors d'oeuvres this year.
It includes food.
It's food. Yeah. I don't think it's dinner. I think it's hors d'oeuvres this year.
That's fine, because I mean, I'll just start to stuff my face with whatever's in front of me, but it still includes food.
It includes food.
So that's a big part of the cost that goes into that ticket, and the sweat is also usually pretty awesome.
Yeah,
so,
and I've seen the swag, and I can tell you, stuff. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Also, at the bash, we have a raffle, so we're raffling off, I don't know if I'm allowed to say.
Things and stuff.
I can tell you that there will be helmets. I can tell you there will be one-of-a-kind helmets. So there's weapons. We have all sorts of, like, little, we're doing some gift baskets. If you are a member of some of the social clubs, like the Beard Society or the Elegant Mandalorian Tea Society, we're doing gift baskets that are themed from the societies. So it's just basically we're bringing the forums to life, and it's everything you love about the forums and the people in them in a room. The other thing is the merch is out too. So if you haven't picked up your Road to Orlando patch, the first variation, there may be two. I don't know if there will be for sure, but I know I've seen two different variations. So if you haven't picked that up, grab that. Every little bit helps. And then we also have the puzzle piece patches, which are all the different clans that are involved in the area. And those are all for sale in the store as well under the celebration tab.
Awesome. Yeah. Those sell fast, too, for people wondering that are looking at the puzzle patch and maybe thinking, oh, I don't know if I should get it. Oh, I'll get it later. No, they sell out pretty quick. So.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nice, too. I'm holding in my hand a BBC one right now because when I was over at Corey's house helping with the build, I picked one up. And, yeah, they're really pretty. I personally, BBC is my favorite, but then I'm a little biased. But they're quite lovely. So if you're looking to do something like help out with the celebration, like maybe help man the booth or something, keep your eyes on the forums. Those will be those signups will be going live shortly when we get a little bit closer. But those opportunities will be there for you to help.
Awesome.
Yes.
I'm especially excited for those live streams. That's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean it's super easy to do now, right? So why not? Unless of course LFL shuts us down. That would be the only reason, but
no.
I think we could certainly do something from the bash.
They definitely one of the cool things they let us do last year, and I hope they'll do it again, was not last year, but 2 years before in Anaheim, they actually let the costume clubs hijack the Star Wars Celebration Instagram page, the official page, for a chunk of the day, or for a chunk of the weekend, whatever it happened to be. So that was pretty sweet. Like, they actually gave us the keys to the car for a little bit, and just told us, just don't do anything stupid.
Do we know if, and I guess maybe I'm throwing the spotlight on somebody here, but are we, the podcast, going to do anything at Celebration this year?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that you asked. We're going to have Oculus Rift compatibility.
That's what you got. What they'll...
We'll do something. I'm not coming to.
The assembled members that are actually going to be there, we're going to at least have one little get-together recording, depending on where we are. Ideally, I'd love to do it right at the booth, if there's any kind of room for it, but we usually do at least one every year. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like they're doing the podcast stage again, which was awesome, but I guess they just don't have the space or the scheduled time to do it, so I guess.
Space is always a pretty difficult thing that they end up juggling around, so that's very likely what it came down to.
Yeah. But we will definitely be doing something, so stay tuned for that. We'll have announcements as to when that's supposed to be and whatnot. We'll be talking that up as we get closer. I think that's all we had for celebration news so far. We don't want to give everything away, because obviously we're going to be talking about this for the next 3 months.
Yes.
We don't want to just dump it all on you at once. But the other big news for the Mercs, we changed the way that we elect our members of the Orderamacad this year, or this past year. We used to basically, the council would get nominations from the members, people who thought that, you know, this person's worth it, this person's worth it, they do good work, she does good work. And the council would vote on it, and every month, just about, we would have a new member of the Order of the Orderamacad. This year, they changed it up a little bit, in that the Order itself actually got everybody's applicants, all of the, all the applicants, all of the recommendations, all of the appointees, whatever you would like to call them. And we actually, members of the Orderamacad, sort of gave our say, you know, not a definitive yes or no as far as whether or not this person can get in, but our heavy recommendation, and then that moved to the council, and then we just gave it to 6 people at once. Instead of, you know, once a month, we just got this nice, tidy batch, which was, in a way, the big thing was that it was better as far as representation. Because sometimes only one guy would get recommended, so naturally he would get in. Other times, only like 2 people would get in, would get recommended for the month. But then, you know, naturally we only got to pick one guy, and it didn't roll over. As far
there
as
was, there was some rollover.
There was.
There was a difficult determination on how long to try and roll someone over.
Right.
Because occasionally you'd have it where it would be like a 5-7 split on the votes, and it would be like, okay, well, the guy that got 5 votes, we should probably try him again next month, and then no, someone else would beat him out. It's like, well, how long do we drag him along?
Right.
Meanwhile, we're bumping other people that otherwise might have gotten the vote, so it's a better system now. Basically, the Orderamacad, they create a shortlist for the council to work from.
And it's just much better in every way. And I can definitely tell you, I can't give you any specifics, obviously, but one of the best parts about that is when somebody did get appointed and they had the and they actually had people able to sort of agree generally pretty heartily on the applicants and whatnot, and just be like, no, this guy. We want this guy in here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think the past order of the Orderamacad inductees, it was really wonderful because you had to be nominated by your peers. Actually, Mr. Dar was one of the people who nominated me, so much love. Here, yeah. The council voted. And that was wonderful because you got the council support. And what I really love about the process now is you still get that council support, and you still get the person or people in some cases. In some cases, some people had 5 or 6 or 7 people nominate them, which was amazing. But now you're vetted by the other members of the order. And like Crow was just saying, I think it's really cool that we're able to look at folks and say, oh, yeah, like, how is this person not already in here? And this person really, really deserves it. And it's wonderful to see that many people echoing that sentiment.
And we're just full of great segues this time. Well, actually, and to that point, one of our inductees was actually our very own Pinocchio from the S team and the long, long, long-serving member of the App team. When his nomination came in, it was actually pretty unanimous. He's not OR already? Like, really?
Overwhelmingly and way overdue.
He should have been in the first run.
Honestly, yeah. Because, I mean, we're looking, and I mean, granted, we're all biased here because we get to talk with Brian and hang out with Brian every month, and we get to hear firsthand from him what a crap job he had to do for so long. But one of the big things, and in a discussion that we had off the forums, he was like, oh, well, I mean, still to this day, he's like, oh, well, you guys should have given that award to someone else.
Extremely humble.
extremely humble, and that is exactly what we're looking for in the order, is people who are willing to do all this great work at their own time. They no particular order whatsoever. Congratulations to everyone on this list. The next person down was Kondar Ward from Sinceri Vertaclan. I don't personally know Kondar that
another well. Another long-term hard worker who's gone above and beyond repeatedly.
Amen.
He's been with the club quite a long time.
I love his watchers.
He's been an RC. He's been a clan officer. He's at all the freaking troops. Like, he's on, like, pretty much any time they have some kind of crazy photo on Instagram, he's usually in it.
Yeah.
So it's, again, like, just, yeah, same sort of thing. No request for reward or recognition. He's just doing his job. And again, awesome. So congrats to Kondar. Next after that is Cypher. From out in California, and we mentioned before there were some people who got, like, more than one nomination. Cypher got more nominations than anyone else, period. Like, I think he got more nominations than anyone in the history of the Order. and even on our end, he was a pretty unanimous shoe-in. Like, another really hard-working, really good guy. Has definitely helped out with relations amongst the Californian clans and whatnot. He's just done a lot of good work for the club. So again, congrats to Cypher. Next down, Nyrod from out in Jagalar clan. There's a trend. Long-serving members who do good work. One of Nyrod's big claims to fame was he was the RC for Europe for a couple of years, and he did a lot to normalize relations out there between the various European clans and sort of boost up Europe as really second to North America as the biggest concentration of mercs, period. In some of those countries, there are more mercs than 501st, which is astounding. and a lot of that is in part due to Nyrob's influence, so again, congrats to him all day. Next down after that, we have Kellen Ord from up in Canada. One of the guys, actually, I got to meet him at C6 or C7, I don't remember. But you've definitely seen pictures of him. There's a picture of him standing in the snow with a legit bonfire behind him. it's one of the most circulated pictures of any of the Mandalorian mercs. He's definitely one of our more photogenic members. So, but at the same time, aside from being just a genuine poster boy for the club, he is also one of the nicest guys I've ever met,
and an extremely hard worker on the app team.
I'd like to echo that. He's always chiming in on the forums. Like Sean just said, as an app team member, he's always responding, always helping people, and yeah, probably one of the most photogenic mercs you're gonna see. Really, really nice guy.
It's the beard.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like you're biased.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah, just a little.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. As I'm looking at Dar on the video with his beard. Glorious, glorious beard. Oh, sorry, pet the beard.
Oh, it's long time coming.
It's so fluff. You do not need a beard in order to be an Order of the O member.
You do not.
But you do need a beard to be part of Beards, the social society.
You do. And our final inductee for 2016, again, this is in no particular order, but the last one we have on the list is Anjo McKee, formerly known as Triker. Also, just another really, really good guy. Like, one of the most enthusiastic members that I've ever personally had the chance to meet. And he also does have the additional factor of he is one of our handicapped members, physically handicapped. He is in a wheelchair, and he actually made his armor so that he could, you know, cruise around in his chair and still troop and whatnot. So he is also a great inspiration to one of our members who is physically disabled. I've used him as an example many times on Facebook and Tumblr questions where people are like, oh, well, I'm, you know, I have to wear crutches, or I have a wheelchair, or I have a scooter. Can I be part of this club? And I'm like, well, take a look at this guy.
You know, I have to say, when I saw him come up in the Oiramakad threads and I read his nomination that somebody had posted, I don't know him personally. I've never met him. But when I read his nomination, what somebody had wrote about him, it brought tears to my eyes. It got me wanting to cry because I've gotten to a point where I've had to step down from actively trooping, and I have to get around with a cane because of my back problems. And when I read all the things that he's done and how much work he's put into his regional area and his clan and doing it all from a wheelchair, it definitely it pulled the heartstrings. And I don't get emotional over stuff very often anymore, but his nomination impacted me so hard because of where I'm at and my health issues that I've developed. I couldn't have recommended this guy more by not even meeting him, just by what he's done and the recommendations that people had vetted for him. It was just, he is definitely an inspirational person for people who are disabled, and I couldn't be happier to see him in the order.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, he really is amazing, and he's a wonderful, like everyone's saying, he's a wonderful role model, and we're just, I think with all these folks that we're inducting, one of the reasons why they're recognized is because we appreciate the volunteer work that they do, and we appreciate the love and the hours and hours of volunteer time that they put into the club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the main thing to note is that they're all going well above and beyond what is required of our regular members. So whether it's, and I've seen people ask us fairly frequently lately, but people are saying like, well, how do I become part of the app team? Or how do I get on this team? Or how do I get over Ramacat? It's always, what we do is we look at what you've been doing when you're not asking specifically to get on the team, but just what your general attitude is towards the boards and helping others and putting into the club what you're getting out of it. So, and that's not to say that you have to be the most active person on the board and post on every single person's thread or anything like that, but in your own way, trying to give back a little bit, trying to help out where it's not required if you so want to. Again, you're not obligated to by any means, but if it's something you like doing and something you like giving back to, then that's where we recognize it. That's how I ended up sitting on the council.
Yeah,
because
I
just
mean,
kept doing jobs and helping out.
That's how I got every single job that I'm in right now.
Yep.
Same here. I asked if I could help with Battlecry, and the next thing I knew, I was PR, so, and Minion, apparently, to Saz. You know, if you do, I think most of the people in these positions are not doing it for the power. They're doing it because they have a true love of this organization, and they're authentically expressing that love by helping. We need people who do everything. We need builders. We need people who can talk good. We need people who can computer good. You know, we need all these things.
Yes, we need people that can computer good.
Yep. Moose computer good. We need all of these things in the club. You can probably hear my bird in the background. I apologize for that. But we need, she agrees. She is saying yes, truly. We need anyone, whatever your abilities are, there's a place for them in the different teams. So if you see one of those teams come open, keep your eye on the news because that's where we post when those things are available.
Yeah, any announcement boards specifically, yeah. And the other thing too, though, is that don't get discouraged if you don't get hired on for the first job that you apply for. Sometimes we have a lot of very talented people that apply for one position, and it's very tough to choose who we want to add in.
Yeah, and also sometimes we get people, lately I've had a lot of people contact me and say, I want to be on the PR team, please add me, and we don't really do that. Usually, you know, you do need to wait until the what are they called?
When we're hiring?
Yeah, the hiring process is open. And just because, and honestly, even though some of the folks who have requested it, I love and adore and would love to put on there, we've had to tell other, you know, we've sort of made it our policy to tell other folks no. So, you know, don't be offended or don't feel bad if you're told like, hey, not right now, but keep an eye out for when we do make it available. Because people cycle out, you know. It's a lot, like those long-term council members that we were talking about who've been doing this for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, That's a long time to give your life something.
No one's sitting at 7 right now, but 5 is...
6.
Yeah, I was about to say, I hope to God no one's sitting at 7.
Tom?
Well, technically.
Tom's
going to I was actually thinking of Tom.
Yeah.
Anytime he gets overwhelmed, he's like, I'm going to create some new positions. So that's another thing you can apply for, guys, is wait for Tom to get tired.
I wanted to touch on that aspect of people getting frustrated when they don't get hired for specific things, because unfortunately, for myself, for the tech team, the podcast, we can hire anyone that's, you know, wanting to sit on, it's a little more open, it doesn't have quite the same list of technical skills, whereas for the tech team, you know, I'm putting out a posting saying, oh, are you familiar with WordPress? You know, are you a Python developer? You know, do you have moderator experience with other forums? There's set specifics that I need. And like Misha was saying, when I get a message, and I've had people message me in the meantime, which I keep a list, for the next time I post up a hiring, I will notify people that have messaged me saying, hey, I was wondering if I could join the team. I do my best to try and message people that had previously shown interest saying, hey, we are now hiring. If I miss you, my bad. I do try, though. But what Misha was saying is, we're all volunteers here, and because we're all running teams, as much as we'd love to add one more person to kind of help with the workload, we've got limited time, and we don't necessarily have the time to train someone or find them a job that slots in. Hang in there and keep applying the jobs that you want to help out with, and you don't have to know absolutely everything about whatever specific job you're hiring or you're looking to apply to either. Just, you know, be forthcoming with the details of what you are and aren't familiar with, and that'll make an impact. Sometimes people that don't know too much but still at least apply are the ones that get chosen.
Well, and let's also remember, like, what we were talking about too, OriRamaCon doesn't mean you have to be applying for jobs within the club. You don't have to be council members get it, but you don't have to be a team member on the brigades. You don't have to be on the PR team. You don't have to be in the various club roles. You can become an OriRamaCon by just doing good things, like we always say, going above and beyond the call of duty of what we are as a charity club. You know, if your job is an LRAD, you're doing your job, but if you go above being an LRAD and you're pushing for, it's so hard to narrow down, like.
Yeah, it's hard to say what we're looking for specifically. but take Anjo, for example, Triker.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ever actually held a position in the club.
Outside of LRAD, no, I don't think he has. I would have to go back and look through what the people had written about him, but I think the only thing that he had was LRAD, and the way they pinned him was he had their clan had pretty much dissolved, and he was pretty much alone from my understanding and remembering. So if I'm wrong about this, you know, feel free to correct me. But he pretty much kept that clan alive, and then because of his tenacity, regardless of the fact that he was in a wheelchair, you know, and so he wasn't just doing his job as an LRAD, but he was doing it above the call of an LRAD because he was the only one there to do it. So, or like Pinocchio, it wasn't because of his just because he was a member of the app team, but it's because he does so much other stuff for the club, such as the art that he does for Celebration and the fact that he's just a generally good guy and helpful and presents the right energy or attitude towards our club. You know, it's not all about hitting every convention you can get. It's not about how many Dragon Con parades you've marched in. There's a deeper level of passion for this club that you have to hold that goes beyond just hitting up forums and hitting up the conventions whatnot.
Mm-hmm. You could get nominated because you're that guy in the club. In your clan that's always hosting armor parties and always helping people out, whether it's on the forum, whether it's on the forums or not on the forums, you could be nominated because you're just always helping out. You know, it doesn't have to be on the forums specifically either.
Oh yeah, one of the former guys on the podcast, Scott, he got in the day that he became official.
Yeah.
Like, because he just had such drive and energy to get into the club, and was doing a whole bunch of stuff with his local clan before he was even a member. So pretty much the second that he got in, we like gave him his kill stripes and the Ororamacad badge. So
yeah, you could also get in just for creating a whole bunch of new tutorials on the site, something that we'd always welcome more of those. That's tended to kind of be something that's trended a little bit less and less that people are doing because we have a decent bit of info. But there are still people that will say, "Oh, I couldn't find anything. I had to go somewhere else." And what I'd hope to see a little bit more of is when those people can't find something on the Merc site and they find it somewhere else, they would write up something so that way the next person that comes looking is going to find something on the Merc site. Mm-hmm. We don't currently have a team dedicated just to creating resources on how to build armor. That's always been a community-driven thing, and that would definitely be something that counts towards Ororamacad. So if you're looking to impress, maybe give that a go. I'm not going to guarantee you an Ororamacad in exchange for X tutorials, but it certainly would have hurt.
Yeah, the
also remember, guys, so those of you who are listening, here's the thing about the Ororamacad. Is that you need, if it's not about earning a badge, it's about doing something good for the club. If you're legitimately interested in the club and you are legitimately a hard worker, you will work, you will do good things, and you will earn the respect of your peers, and then maybe you'll earn an Ororamacad. It's about doing good things for other people. Those are the people who get the Ororamacad. It's not just people who do a lot of work. Those people do have a general tendency to get it, but it's not about, oh, I'm going to work on this really, really hard for 6 months and then I'll get my Ororamacad. That's not how it works. You go in, you do good work, and then eventually maybe you'll get it. It's a thing you can strive for, but it's not something you strive for like, okay, and now I get to test for my Ororamacad.
Okay, and now I can talk. The other thing, too, to keep in mind is that once you get it, you are kind of held to a little bit of a higher standard because you are sort of a role model then. I mean, yes. You're wearing, you know, you kind of wear that badge pretty proudly, and that's wonderful, but we do expect you to behave.
To maintain that what you earned.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Star. And one thing that we touched on this really briefly, but I just wanted to sort of echo it because we did get a lot of really great nominations, but some of the nominations that we got were things like, I'm nominating so-and-so because they're a good Alarad, and that's awesome. We love that, you know.
We love that we good Alarad.
Person X is a great Alarad or a great Veerlord, but there needs to be an and also.
Yeah, there are ways that we recognize our clan officers, but that is separate to the Ororamacad.
Yeah, but there needs to be they're a great Alarad, and they also, these are the other reasons why they deserve to be, to be recognized, because we would hope that everyone is a great Alarad. We're hoping. I mean, I realize that that's not always the case, but really and truly, you know, when we get nominations that say this person's a great Alarad, they find lots of events, and they always post them on the forums, and they turn in their reports on time, well, that's kind of the job description. Yeah, that's the job description. So just keep that in mind when you're nominating. And hey, when the nominations open up next year, please send them to us. We want to know who you think deserves this honor.
I want to say that they are already...
Shut up, they're open already?
Well, I don't think they ever technically close.
Well, see, there you go.
Just rolls over to the next year.
It just keeps going and going.
Yeah, so if there is someone that you think that deserves the Order of the Ororamacad, definitely put them in. We actually, on top of our six, we actually had a short list of other people who were also just given...
an honorable mention.
Yeah. So, because, I mean, these are people that were pretty much, we were limited to six, and we had to pick six, but there were other people that we definitely felt were worth noting, their service and the things they've done for the club and all that good stuff. And anybody who is not currently a member of the Order of the Ororamacad is eligible to be nominated. Anybody,
yeah.
Pretty much. Like, as long as they are in...
You cannot double up on your Ororamacad.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get it twice.
Yeah, you can't get
it. Even if you get the Ororamacad, and then you join the council, and serve at least 6 months in order to get the Ramic Head through service on the council.
Yeah, yeah,
you can't double dip. Not you don't get like Ramic Head level up.
Yeah, you don't get an Ramic Head with clusters. You know, it doesn't.
Right. Well, for me, it would be extra sparkles.
I mean, that goes without question, though.
I'm pretty sure you already have extra sparkles.
I do. You should. Araya Funk made me a Ori Ramic Head, like a blue acrylic that had glitter in it. Like, it's laser etched. It's ridiculous. It's chest diamond, but it's blue sparkle. Yeah, it's awesome. So that's my. But the one, though. Yeah. And how do you know? I mean, if you've seen people that on their chest diamond or somewhere on their kit, they have a little symbol. Can someone help me describe it? I don't know.
It's the letters. Well, it's the wheat symbol from Boba Fett's chest armor. Mm-hmm. It's the wheat symbol, and then it's got the OR in
the OR. Yeah.
And that sits in the middle of your chest diamond.
And some people don't have chest diamonds. I think. Point of Origin once told me that he didn't have a chest diamond, so he has it on his, I think, bicep. I know a while back ago, I did an article for Battlecry about the Order of the Ori Ramic Head members, and when I wrote everybody, and I had a couple people write back and say, I actually don't have it on my chest diamond because I don't have one. So people sometimes put it different places, but when you see the members that have that symbol on their chest diamond, that means that they were inducted into the Order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's generally legacy members, because a lot of those chest plates don't have physical diamonds, so they put it somewhere in the middle of the chest where the diamond would be. You know, you get creative. But for those of us who have a more standard, modern kit, then yeah, we just have it right on the diamond. So yeah, if you're ever curious, look for that. It's usually not long after the award that that it gets painted right on there.
And some of us get it sent to us.
Just not that likely that anyone would, but if you're not or your Ramic Head, don't put it on your armor.
Don't do it. Yeah, that's a big no-no.
The same as with brigades, where you can't put a brigade symbol on until you join the brigades. If you haven't earned or Ramic Head, do not put that on your armor.
Yes.
I would certainly hope no one does.
Everybody knows what the symbol is. I've actually encountered that. Like, people just see it and think it's a cool symbol and they don't know. But same thing, also with your clan, you might want to, if you want to put your clan symbol on your kit, check with your clan. Please make sure they're okay with that. Some clans don't care. Some clans don't want you to put it on until you're official. So just throwing that out
there. Yeah, that, the clan one specifically for people that aren't official. Anyone that's official in that clan, totally fine. Also, people that aren't in the clan and want to put another clan's symbol on.
Yeah.
You might want to check. Chances are, if you're doing it, you probably already have checked or you've been told that you can. But if just in case.
So that was all we had on the Ori Ramic Head members. Again, congratulations to our newest 6. Good to have you. And we definitely look forward to our next batch as they come in. So again, if you think of somebody that you think deserves a nomination, definitely put it in. There's a form right on the forums. And we'll see that definitely gets all the due review it requires. But moving on, we're gonna talk specifically about Rebels in a couple minutes here. But specifically, one of the things that I do want to mention naturally with the newest episode, what was it actually called? Yeah, with the Mandalorian / Jedi history that was imparted to us during that episode.
Oh boy!
Actually, a lot of people have been asking about whether or not now. You can carry a lightsaber with your custom Mandalorian. Answer still no.
No.
There are still specific titles where you can. Specific canon characters like Prey Vizsla. Now, if you have a Sabine costume, now it's fair game. But again, only for the darksaber. And there are a few of the other very specific ones from the old canon, which I will also add that almost no one has ever done. So,
in part because references to a lot of the older era stuff, so that does limit their ability to do it. And that's why
that people are so hard set on carrying a lightsaber to the point where they'll try and skirt the rules, but they won't make one of the sets of armor that lets them do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, and for the character that they just introduced in Rebels, the guy who originally created the darksaber, He's the shadow puppet so far. Yeah, Tarvisla.
We do not know what he looks like. We have no idea what he looks like. Honestly, it's
probably... The image that's going around on the internet is fan art or concept art. I don't recall which, but it is not actual, official anything. So far, he's just a shadow puppet. So unless you create a shadow puppet with a shadow puppet Darksaber, no dice.
And I'll also point out that likely, given the time span we're talking about here, Tar Vizsla is likely going to be a Crusader at the very latest, really, like if we're honest. And even the shadow puppet looks kind of Crusader-y. So the chances of you with your custom modern Mandalorian carrying a lightsaber are still zero.
Yeah, like the tale said, he was the one Mando to get into the Jedi Order.
Yep.
And we're talking hundreds, thousands of years ago.
Actually, the words are, he's the first Mandalorian. So that's not to say they might not show something else, but he's the only one that's ever been referenced as Mandalorian to go into the Jedi Order. So,
well, they specifically didn't say anything about like any further Mandalorians becoming Jedi.
No, they didn't mention.
Was my point.
Yeah, they didn't mention any
Even it's such a rarity, and I'm gonna guess that at some point later on they will explain why that wasn't such a good idea, and they're never doing it again.
Well, you know, I gotta say I'm not against it, because the way that they've determined they've shifted the Force away from being a clinical thing that the Old Republic Jedi looked at with midichlorians, and they've brought it back to the more mythical, mystical magic that it used to be. And to say that a Mandalorian could not become a Jedi, you know, at least in the Old Republic era, I can't say that it bothers me at the idea, because then how does the Force become so uninclusive, I guess would be the word? I mean, I understand by our standards in the Mercs, you know, the Mercs itself, yeah, no Jedi. We can't, that just doesn't go with our club. But in the overall canon and the overall arching story that they're developing, it doesn't bother me as much as it might have maybe 2-3 years ago when I feel that I was a little bit more hard-lined in the Mando culture mentality. And now that I've gotten a little bit older and I'm a little bit more, I enjoy Star Wars for all that there is about Star Wars. The concept of a Mandalorian at one point becoming that, and even then, his lightsaber is completely different. He is still a standalone, standout incarnation. So it doesn't bother me as much as I know a lot of people, when they first announced the teaser for it, went ballistic on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But as somebody that's trying to be open-minded to the new direction that they're taking the canon, it's not detrimental to our club, because, again, as we state, there's no Mandalorian Jedi allowed in our club outside of specific things like Vardin Jusic, but I don't think he ever got I don't think there's a CRL for him. But either way...
The thing is, though, is with Vardin Jusic, the character in the backstory is that he was a Jedi, then he went with his clones to Mandalore to live, and he gave up the Jedi life. He gave up carrying a lightsaber. Yeah, he stopped carrying a lightsaber, he stopped using the Force, he stopped being a Jedi, and he became a Mandalorian. And that's why our club and most people object to Mando Jedi or Mando Sith, is because there's a quote by Virgir about three-sided knife. I don't know the exact words off the top of my head right now, but essentially, it's like having two polar opposite belief systems, and you say, "Oh, that's okay. I'll just do both." They don't match. You know, as neat and as cool as lightsabers are, for the purposes of costuming, you can make a Jedi costume, you can make a Mando costume, you can have both, but you can't have both at the same time. Well, that's not even true. You can have both at the same time. There's no club for it currently. And if you want to go out and make your own Mando Jedi club, knock yourself out. And that's not to be disparaging towards anyone that thinks the idea is cool. It's just a different opinion. It's a different stance, and it's one that, based on the story and the stories that have been written and the way that the lore is set up, it just doesn't support it. Or at least that's my two cents on it.
That episode, I will say, is probably one of my favorite episodes of the series. Mostly because I've come to enjoy Kanan. His character's story arc has grown so much. I'm biased. The Captain Rex episodes are hands down my favorite. Especially the Rex versus Rex and Kanan episodes are hilarious. But this episode had such depth because it brought Sabine. I watched the Rebel Recon and they were talking about it, and it was they don't have an overarching story to this. Well, they do, but they it's a self-contained episode focusing on mostly two characters, specifically Sabine. And it gives us a little bit of her backstory, which is pretty interesting. It gives us a new look at Finn Rao's armor, which is unique. But it takes Sabine's character, and it definitely gives her some character development and growth. And that's something that you don't see a lot of in this show. I mean, there's a little bit of it, but this one really showed her character taking a dynamic shift in her destiny, I guess you could say, with Star Wars being all about a character's destiny. Her destiny is to eventually lead the Mandalorians and, you know, become something more than what she is. And this episode certainly pushes that direction for her, which is something you really don't see in a lot of the Rebels cartoons, because it's mostly aimed for kids. So to see something so deep and so thoughtful of a character, definitely it speaks volumes of Dave Filoni's directing and the direction he's taking the canon.
Well, and that's par for the course for them. That's exactly what they did with Clone Wars as well, which I think was actually targeted at a slightly younger audience.
Rebels was targeted. The way they did it is that Clone Wars was targeted at a fairly young audience, and then as the
7 to 8.
And the show matured as kids matured while they were watching it, and then Rebels kind of stepped back a little bit to try and catch some newer, younger fans, but it didn't jump quite as far back as Clone Wars did. And now again, the show is maturing and growing with them, which is really cool.
You know, and just the slight shift on the Rebels discussion. You know, last season too, when they introduced Rex. You know, and I kind of really identify with him more than I used to before, and it's not just because of the beard and the bald head now. But there's a couple episodes, especially in the introduction of Rex, where you really get to see that Rex, Wolf, and Gregor, they have issues from the war. And I mean, you really see it with Wolf, his initial reaction on Kanan igniting his lightsaber. And he's obviously got a PTSD reaction, a very severe one. You see Gregor, he's kind of goofy and quirky in the head, and kids like it. He thinks he's silly, but they're really playing on the fact that he's got to have a TBI, or a traumatic brain injury, from when he jumps in the explosion in the Clone Wars. And then in the third season, before the mid-season break, there's an episode with Rex, Kanan, and Ezra. They land on a planet to salvage some Clone War weaponry and supplies. And Ezra makes an offhand comment about the battle droids being, they don't look that scary to me. And, mind you, I'm kind of paraphrasing here. Rex turns around and snaps on him, and he tells him, no, you don't understand. You know, I lost a lot of brothers fighting against these robots. They're a lot more deadly than you think. And he snaps on him. And Kanan makes a comment to Ezra, chiding him, saying, not all scars are visible. And that right there, as a veteran, it really spoke to me with this show, because it's a very subtle but direct way of dealing with PTSD, which is not something that is still kind of a stigma that a lot of society doesn't really deal with, even though it's made leaps and bounds. But for a kids' cartoon show, a Star Wars show of all things, to address that, it just... ooh, I'm getting kind of emotional thinking about that scene. But it really pulled on me. And so Rebels is, the way they're doing things, even though it's still a kid's show, it's so well done. And it's so...
There's a lot of depth.
Yeah, there's more depth than what people think when they just see the cartoony look of it and the fact that it's on Disney XD. But when you actually sit down and watch the episodes, there are things for everybody, for kids and adults, and they're just doing so great with everything about that show. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on the side tangent there, but...
very good insight on it.
It's a show that's really begun to... it's really impacted me with those couple of episodes, so I hope with Sabine becoming a more leadership game garnered direction. The next episode is supposed to be about her going back to Mandalore and addressing her position in her clan and her family. I really hope that Sabine can be a character for little kids in the same way Rex has become a character for me to identify with.
I like just how they're actually... The first season of Rebels, because we were going to talk about Rebels anyway, we'll just move right into it.
Yeah.
They were, like, the first season didn't wow me a whole lot, I'll admit, you know, because it did have that age rollback. It went from, you know, the teenage level of season 6 and or 7 of the Clone Wars back to, you know, maybe like 12-year-olds. So it was definitely a little bit more kid-friendly, and that lost me a little bit. Second season kind of brought back some stuff, like they brought in more of the Mandalorian stuff that we all find so interesting. They brought in Vader, they brought more of the Inquisitors in just to make that more menacing. But this third season is they're really bringing it out. Like, we still got Vader, they brought back Thrawn, like, they're really starting to flesh out Sabine's character in a really solid way, because she really had a whole lot of development over the past couple seasons, at least compared to the other characters. It's a problem that every show with an ensemble cast has.
It's kind of nice, too, to see a break from the Inquisitors.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Because for a little while there, it was kind of like, okay, you know, only two there are, no more, no less, for the Sith, and then you've got, like, Inquisitors flying around with their spinny lightsabers. It's like, okay, hang on, like, that's the worst. They're not Sith, but I thought there was only supposed to be two. Like, let's not oversaturate the market here.
And those lightsabers, like, I honestly, like, I'm pretty happy with a lot of Mr. Filoni's decisions as far as the show and what to include and what to bring back and whatnot. And standardized lightsabers for the Inquisitors, I'm all about. Like, I get that they don't get to build their own because they're not Jedi or Sith, but having them be laser helicopters?
It feels like someone pitched the idea, and probably based on looking at Grievous, where he was spinning around with his droid articulated wrist just spinning the blades, and it was a cool visual effect. Oh, and then someone pitched it saying, hey, let's bring that back, but let's make it for non-droids so they just get this spinny thing. And then someone else went, yeah, that'll sell real good as a toy.
Well, and it did, like, because the Inquisitor lightsaber you can get at Toys R Us does spin and rotate and that sort of thing. And again, that was okay when it was just the first Inquisitor, the Jason Isaacs Inquisitor, and all it did was spin. And it was just a neat little party trick that he didn't do all the time.
Yeah.
But then when the Seventh Sister and the other dude just started flying around with him, it's like, no.
It was, the plot device got overused.
The line has been crossed.
Yeah. I wasn't even all that.
Time out, that's where your line was.
That was it. Honestly, like, I like having the A-Wings and the B-Wings back, even though being a security is a bit dumb.
I like them.
And
you like the A-Wings and B-Wings.
I get to see more of them now. Mm-hmm. That's all I care about. Like, I don't care that in the old canon it's 10 years too early. I really don't, because that old canon doesn't exist as far as Dave Filoni's concerned.
Well, and I mean, it's the same kind of thing as with the
on
Hammerhead.
On many levels.
You know, the Hammerhead Corvettes that they brought into both Rebels and,
mm-hmm.
this might be an early segue, yep. but Episode 8.
Yeah. Yep.
Or not Episode 8, sorry, Rogue One.
Rogue One.
The 8th Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And had a friend that was saying, like, oh, well, how can they bring it back? You know, if they tried to use that ship, all its systems would be so antiquated if they stole it from somewhere. And I said, well, maybe they just found the plans and they made some. Well, the Rebel can't afford to make them. No, someone made some new versions of the old design because it's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
The
universe
the day,
spans thousands of years, but
and
this
the
is
day,
kind of more or less just extrapolated on itself. So whether you have...
We're a bunch of nerds, like, arguing over stuff that's in a movie.
Well, yeah.
You know, and in books and everything. And I think that's part of the fun, is getting to discuss, like, whether or not that's possible or whether or not it's okay. But,
And I will point out, like, in that Hammerhead, just to further prove Misha's point that we're idiots arguing over things that don't matter.
I just said, keep that in mind, because people get really heated over this. I am looking at you, husband unit, who gets really angry and upset over things being changed in his childhood. Yeah, don't look at me like you're sweet and innocent.
Well, like, the design for the Hammerhead Cruiser, if you're following the old canon, that design was in service for 200 years.
Which was my point entirely, is that...
In Earth span, like, we have, like, B-52s. Some of those have been flying around for 50 years, and that's ridiculous in terms of military hardware.
In the Star Wars universe...
Dreadnought. The HMS Dreadnought, which is the... It is a battleship that was created by the British Navy, I think it was 1912, has the same hull design as... pretty much everything up until the Trimaran ships came out. We only have a couple of those. So in the real world, we have used a single hull design in varying scales for more than a century. So the idea that a couple hundred meter long spaceship could just be using a relatively similar design is not only not far-fetched, since you can upgrade engines and stuff on these kinds of things pretty easily, it would make sense. You would actually have similar configurations because you chose that one for a reason in the first place. It's like why all the Star Destroyers are triangular. It's because that means that all they can shoot really big broadside barrages, and then if they are facing whatever they're shooting at, both broadsides can fire on the thing in front. Now, they can't hit anything behind them, but they can absolutely devastate things in front of them. So it's like things are actually built in a way for a reason. That was the reason Macquarie designed them that way in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you're always design, Star Wars, you're right. Always gonna have better armor, better weapons, better energy, power sources. But it's all in universe where it's like you have spaceships and all sorts of cool stuff. Yeah. So you're always gonna have spaceships and you're always gonna I think it's fantastic just to such a wide range of different designs of ships that we have, but there's nothing wrong with them saying, like, you know what, that was a cool design, let's bring it back.
And speaking of bringing stuff back...
I must say, it'll fit you as dead as an AR-15.
But speaking of bringing things back, you know, again, I'm hyping up the Rebels Recon that I've been watching. Pablo Hidalgo confirmed that Thrawn's ship in Rebels is, in fact, the Chimera, which is from the old canon lore. The four of them recycling it. So it's not everything is a lot of people, you know, the doom and gloomers that Disney's ruining everything. No, they're bringing things back. You know, Thrawn's going to have a new book coming out in, let me see, I just pulled it out, April 11th, I believe it was, that I just looked at. I closed the window out. But, you know, Thrawn's coming back. They're giving him a new story, and it's going to be... actually, I watched an interview with Timothy Zahn discussing how he's writing Thrawn in this Rebels era, which is something he's never really written before. So he's not just doing a rebooting of Thrawn, but he's getting a chance to rebring him into this new canon, or the canon, rather, and giving him a fresh take that we've never gotten to read about before. But it's still Thrawn. We know who Thrawn is. We know what he's capable of. But he's getting a fresh coat of paint, and I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, while we're talking about cool things, bringing back the old canon into the new canon, everybody, I'm assuming, has seen Rogue One at this point, right?
If you haven't seen Rogue One, turn off the podcast and go watch Rogue One.
I will.
I've seen it 8 times, so I think I got it covered.
Well, I want to open up with this then. Whatever people thought. I've talked with this about a bunch of people, you know, Star Wars fans and not, and pretty much everybody has agreed that one of the best parts of the movie is the final 20 minutes.
Hands down.
Yeah. And for us, we were talking about this before we saw the movie, and both of us just had this hope that Vader would come and kill everybody himself at the end, just to tie up all the loose ends and BBA.
He did.
The only change is he doesn't kill everyone himself.
Technically speaking, actually, Grand Moff Tarkin kills everybody.
True.
Okay, let's just dive right into that.
I did not predict that at all. But then as soon as I hear a voice and I'm like, that's me doing a Peter Cushing impression.
The reflection in the window is like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, and then it pans over behind him and you see him sitting there being skinny and old, and I'm like, that's somebody who is going to be wearing Peter Cushing's face. And then he turns around and I'm like, that's somebody wearing Peter Cushing's face.
That is Peter Cushing's face.
Leatherface.
It was really good. It was really well done.
Jedi Chainsaw Massacre.
I personally wish that they would have just stuck with him in Reflections, but at the same time, I'm not mad. I do like what they did with it.
When I saw the reflection, I thought, oh, that's a creative way of getting around having to do his face. And then he turned around, I was like, oh.
Well, oh.
Wow, that's CGI. I thought it was
I think they're trying to. The technology is a lot more here than it was in, let's say, Tron, 7 years ago. And so they're trying to push that forward because, honestly, most of the people who are in Star Wars, vast majority of the people who are in Star Wars, that is the most important thing they do in their career, right? Like, very, very few people leave Star Wars with a career. It's basically like Natalie Portman, Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, and Harrison Ford.
Some of them already had careers before, though. I mean,
this is just another check on the list. You know?
Well, Eric, you're clearly forgetting about Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
Most people forget she was even in it.
She was Dorme, wasn't she?
Yep.
Some people had to rebuild their careers.
Yeah, she was one of Padme's decoys. A lot of people forget about her. She was trying to look like Padme the whole time.
I don't know if that necessarily counts, because that's barely even a face character. Either way, the point is that very, very few people, like hundreds and hundreds of people, work on Star Wars every time they make a new movie, and they literally have hundreds of actors in it, and like six come out with a real career afterwards. So it is often the most important thing that anybody has ever, that they will ever do. And so Disney is going to recycle those people's images in the form of that film. That's going to happen.
Well,
right? I mean, they've been doing it for
Not necessarily. I mean, I know that there was a lot of hubbub when Carrie Fisher passed away, and Disney came straight out and said they're not. I believe it was more Lucasfilm came out and said going to do the same thing with Carrie Fisher as they did with the CGI facing in Rogue One.
I mean, they had to open up.
They even said in the in their announcement that they almost never give in to speculation or address rumor, but they're like, okay, guys, this is big.
Gotta put a damn
on
the
whoa.
It's out of control.
Well, I think that probably that also has to do with respect for the dead, for the recently deceased.
Absolutely.
They did a lot of research, and they did go and reach out to Peter Cushing's estate, and they did give a lot of consideration to it. Plus, when they went into it, it was almost impossible. I mean, it could have been done, but it would have been very, very difficult for them to tell a story about the Death Star without addressing Tarkin, who has, in all the lore, been hand-in-hand involved with the creation of the Death Star. So it was a very ambitious thing of them to do, and the fact that they were able to pull it off, it just proves Rogue One, in my opinion, was with The Force Awakens, they had to show that they're coming back with Star Wars and they're going to go forward with it and to bring back the fan base that was lost during the prequels. So they brought in the original cast and they got a new story going forward. But with Rogue One, they really had to establish, we are going to do Star Wars, but we can do both new era Star Wars, and we can go all the way back to 1979 or 1977 and bring you right back into the same world that introduced your parents or your great-grandparents or whoever, you know, bring everybody right back to where it all started. And that's what they did with Rogue One. And they knocked that, they took that and knocked it out of the ballpark.
I think the fact that we have Rogue One and that Rogue One has made $1 billion now, by the way, guys, Rogue One made $1 billion.
Yeah.
The fact that Rogue One made $1 billion for like a $150 million movie means that we are going to get a long and storied career of Star Wars movies that are not quite the same as other Star Wars movies. Because Rogue One does have some funny moments in it, but Rogue One is actually a lot less funny than the other Star Wars movies. Like, the Star Wars movies are actually like 20% humor. And Rogue One had like some sideways jokes with K2SO. that was it. Like, it had some those, and I guess it technically had a couple with Chirrut and Faze.
Yep.
The blind jokes.
Yep.
But the vast majority of it was actually deadpan serious, almost like, you know, planet destroying super weapon.
Well, I mean, it is a war movie.
Was a Star War movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was, you could have just taken out Death Star plans for Nazi super weapon, and it's, you know,
it's well, kind of would have to wear gray, but,
you know,
but gray or black.
Yeah. So either way, it's definitely a completely different kind of film, which is actually what excites me more because,
oh, yeah.
I want to see that from Star Wars. That was something that Lucasfilm, when it was still owned by George, sort of branched out into in the latter years when they released the original Death Trooper book. Where they were trying to come up with new content that hit different angles. That was when they were going to start the whole like Star Wars Journeys or whatever it was called. What was it? The one with Seth Green?
Detours. That was Detours.
There were going to be Detours and all that stuff. They were trying to branch out. Who was it?
Seth Green.
Yeah, Seth Green.
Seth Green and
Beckenmeyer.
Yeah. Matt Steiner. They were going to try and broaden out, so they were going to have a larger audience, because they realized that the Star Wars episodes of Robot Chicken were the highest grossing episodes of Robot Chicken. I feel like our experience of that sort of content from George's house was a little bit lame, looking at you Death Troopers. From what we can tell by virtue of Rogue One, we're in for good stuff from Disney. It's almost like Disney has always made a panoply of movies.
I saw an article a couple months back where they had made a statement about how they're going to allow the various, I guess the anthology word isn't the way they're allowed to describe the movies anymore, but the Star Wars stories is the way that they're taking it now. But the various non-saga films, they're going to allow the directors to kind of give them their own feel. So, like, Rogue One was a war film, you know? That's why they got Gareth Edwards to do it. I can't think of who they got directing the Han Solo film.
It's the guys from the Lego Movie film, so that movie is going to be a comedy.
But they're going to allow it to have a different feel than the saga films. You know, they're probably going to take it into kind of like either a Western or a heist or something that's not, again, I think it's going to be like Rogue One, where it's not going to be full of Jedi, but it's going to be set in that dark Empire, not Dark, but the Dark Pretty. Times as, well, no, the Dark Times, what Obi-Wan referred to as Empire's reign over the galaxy, the Dark Times. But they're going to be in that era because it's a young Han Solo and a young Lando, and so it's not going to have the same feel as Rogue One because it's not going to be, you know, Han doesn't care about the war, he's doing his own thing. But he's not a part of the Skywalker lineage at that time. So again, it's going to have its own twist and feel that is going to be separate from Rogue One and separate from the saga films.
I'm looking forward to it. It almost makes me think that Star Wars will be a genre of film at some point, because if it's able to branch out in such a wide variety, it will be kind of its own category of film.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
just want to jump in because I've been very quiet for a while.
She's still with us, yeah.
I'm still with you. I have listened to everything you guys have said.
Same
but
here.
It's hard to get a word in edgewise with you all. I don't know if you all have ever noticed that in other podcasts. Sometimes I tend to be a little quiet because I'll sit here going, yes, and so just wait my turn and then I pounce. But Rogue One was... I don't know how old everyone else is on the podcast. I think Brian is the oldest. But Rogue One was really special to me because it brought back the Star Wars I knew from my childhood. And a lot of people said that with Episode 7. A lot of people said, oh, this is very reminiscent of Episodes 4, 5, and 6. But and it was to a point because, I mean, we had Harrison in there and we had Carrie, you know, but... It didn't have quite the same feeling, and oh, Rogue One so did. And it was darker, it definitely was, but there were elements there that I remember seeing on the big screen when I first saw the Star Wars movies. So I just think that this was such a cool thing and such a neat idea to put together. And one of my friends made a comment, you know, they said, the reason they really liked the movie was because it wasn't, I mean, yes, it was a prequel, but it really made some of the other movies make a lot more sense. Not that they were great movies originally, not that they weren't wonderful standalones, but it kind of filled in some additional pieces of the puzzle. And I think that was really fantastic. And we saw some things in there that we hadn't seen before. This is going to be my opportunity to talk about Donnie Yen, so I have the mic and I'm running with it. But really, are you coughing, Dar? Really, we haven't seen. I mean, Ray Park, you know, he's a recognized martial artist, and he did a good job with he did a pretty good job with Darth Maul in terms of the fighting scenes. A lot of what he did was weapons work. We really hadn't seen someone who did as much hand-to-hand as Donnie Yen did in this film. And for those of us that are really into martial arts and action, that was pretty darn cool. So I think it's, and I mean, of all the people that they got to do it, like, hell yeah. So I think that it's really wonderful that they... It seems like they're just it's almost like they're throwing open the floodgates and just, you know, strong female protagonists, even though I know everybody gets really pissy about that in Episode 7. Sure, you know,
I think that's using... a bit of an overstatement that everyone gets pissy about the strong.
Well, not I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Not everyone, but I saw a lot of people not especially
a very vocal minority making way too much noise over a very small thing.
fair enough.
Dickheads.
But anyway, as I was saying, yeah, so a very, thank you, Moosey, always with the nice, a very vocal minority, but we've, my goodness, Rogue One's ensemble cast was a wonderfully diverse cast, and I mean, Episode 7 as well, and how cool is that Lucasfilm and Disney have really been actively working to make more and more characters accessible to everyone. I think that's really, yeah. And I just see that Star Wars kind of like what you guys were talking about, it becoming this global franchise. I see that happening in that it's not just it's not just a movie that, like, I have seen numerous people posting, yes, I totally followed Hunnigan's Facebook page. The number of people that posted on his Facebook page that said, I have never seen a Star Wars movie, but I went and saw this because of you. And I don't know. I mean, most Americans probably wouldn't have thought that that would have come from a Chinese actor, but he's he's a superstar over there, and that brought in a whole nother audience. And I just think that that's, and Bob too, like, I think that that's so amazing that we've reached that point where Star Wars isn't just like our little nerdy world anymore. It's an entire global, just thing that's exploding, and I think that that's wonderful.
Oh yeah, one of the other things, and I think this is the exact same thing you're going to talk about, Daryl. I saw it on Twitter. Diego Luna retweeted a thing from one of his fans who went to see the movie with her father. Her father grew up in Mexico and was just astounded by the fact that Diego Luna kept his actual accent the entire movie, Diego being Mexican, and how that just like really struck a chord with her father, who was just like, hey, he's the lead actor in this and he's Mexican. That is amazing. Star Wars is doing this now. That is amazing. Yeah. And yeah, honestly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing because I had a few friends that had commented that it's like it's the most, like, they were surprised at just how many colored people they saw, is their words.
This has pretty much always been Americans and Brits.
And, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it was one of those things where it's, I just watched Star Wars, love Star Wars, I didn't really care what background that. And it was kind of one of those things where I wrote one another time. I tried to pay that. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, they're totally right. You know, I get so wrapped up in watching the film for what it is that I'm not doing a headcount on that. But it also isn't a subject I would normally think of when watching films typically. And it was pretty incredible to see just how many people they had in diversity.
And I think
that's awesome
because
it's gonna help with the industry, and it hopefully it helps with Hollywood kind of opening those doors a little bit more and having that's one of the big things I like with Star Wars. Coming back to what we had said earlier about the actors and a lot of them aren't career actors afterwards, but it's really nice to see that Star Wars draws on a lot of different people from a lot of different places, and it isn't just it's not Brad Pitt and Keanu Reeves and like three other actors that do everything. You know, they're not grabbing the big names for every single role.
Agreed. And just to talk really, just to point really quickly to what Sean just said, you made the really beautiful point about how you don't really look for those in films, and I don't necessarily know if people do. But what people do look for is people that look like them. Mm. And that was I think, the point that, what?
No, look, same thing, like, to what you're saying, like, I have never had a Star Wars character that really, like, I could easily, costume as, like, a face character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right here. Like, that guy, like, I saw him pop up on the screen, I'm like, hey, that right there, I need a suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and that's something that it's giving a lot. Like, this is gonna sound weird, but little girls will see me in my Nando and say, "Oh, you're Princess Leia," and I'm like, "What? How do we even?" I mean, and seriously, because for a long time, the only female Star Wars character that they really kind of knew that was a girl was Leia, or every once in a while I would get Padme, but usually Leia. I guess because my hair is brown. I don't know. And law? I don't even know. I have no clue, but that's what I would get. And so I think it's fantastic and we should also probably say that's not to limit anybody. That doesn't mean if, someone wants to do Bodhi or whatever that they can't. We're not saying anything about limitations. It's just really amazing that such a widely seen franchise seems to be maybe pretty deliberately, actively making those steps to be inclusive. I think that's really fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, something that's kind of been swirling in my brain as we discuss this and some of the comments that we discussed during the Rebels discussion, the diversity of Star Wars has grown, and they're touching on so many things, such as bringing in Chinese actors such as Donnie Yen, and I can't pronounce the other guy's name that played Baze, or Diego Luna, or the way that they brought in female lead characters like Jyn Erso or Sabine and everything, or like for myself with Captain Rex. Star Wars is becoming an open world where everybody can have somebody that they can identify with, that they can relate with, that touches some form of inspiration to them or to their father, like with Diego Luna. You know, so many new things are happening with Star Wars that I think it's becoming so much more relatable to the fans than it ever was before.
Yeah. Yep. Honestly, yeah, it's Star Wars. And I'm sorry to say this, folks. Star Wars isn't just for nerds anymore.
Gasp.
No, and it's opened up for the mainstream, and it's no longer just for the old folks that were turned on to it when they saw the original one back in 1977. It's opened up for there's a third generation of Star Wars that's been exposed now.
Old folk?
Yeah, you heard me.
It's true, I'm an old lady.
But we love you.
I didn't see, the first one I saw in the theater was Jedi, so.
Yeah, I'm talking 1977 original.
Not that old.
No.
Yet.
But it's still, you know, there's so much resistance from the fan, the original screening of Star Wars, not A New Hope, that have plagued the franchise for decades now, that I think it's Star Wars is finally getting up to a point where the people who were so adamantly, if it's not the original VHS tape version from the original theatrical Han shot first, you know, those people are being pushed aside now. You know, it's open for their children and their children's children. And I think that's the direction Star Wars needs to go.
Yeah. So,
all right, so yeah, I think we
I'm looking at our agenda.
We've got
that.
Yeah, one question. Our sort of Q&A for everybody. This was, as I mentioned before, the member that was surprised to hear back from one of the quote-unquote head honchos from the Merc so quickly. Though, again, I ain't. Vex, currently an unofficial member working towards getting their armor, asked us that they've noticed people like to have fancy gadgets such as Bluetooth capabilities and, quote, I'm wondering if you guys would be for entire clans installing this as functioning comm between members, making cons and other events easier for the Mercs. Also, do you think it would be feasible for someone to design a real 360 display inside the bucket, or at least a forward display?
Oh boy.
As far as the first part, some clans have actually tossed around the idea of buying two-way radios for official members and whatnot. I know that some clans occasionally have one back at their table if someone needs to be reached. Nowadays, with cell phones, it's not such a big deal anymore, now that pretty much everybody's got a way to have a phone handy on their person. Two-way radios aren't as necessary as they used to be, as they used to seem to be. The big thing there is cost. Like, it would be awesome, but, you know, equipping even my clan, which is only, like, 10 official members, that's, like, even if we were to just use, like, a cheap $50 radio, that's on the order of a couple hundred bucks.
Nowadays, instead, you can just buy a set of Bluetooth headphones and OK Google.
Exactly. And not everybody has to have the rig that I have where their phone is physically strapped hidden in their gauntlet. You can just have it in a pouch or something.
Yeah, I was about to say, I keep mine in a pocket and literally, yeah. OK Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from the tech officer perspective, you can definitely do the Bluetooth and just call people with OK Google, as Ross was mentioning. If you wanted to actually have a proper comms system where you have multiple people all on one call, then you're going to potentially end up with some steep three-way multi, you know, conference call charges if you're using your phone.
Got a smartphone, use Discord, Skype, or any one of the other free apps and just ring up a giant data bill.
Yes, well, and then the other, well, that was what I was going to touch on next, is that ignoring the data limitations of your data plan on your phone is also going to be that the most useful place that this is going to be used is at a large convention, you know, where there are thousands of other people with phones trying to all get their cell signals out to the nearby cell tower within a large building that has poor reception to begin with.
You go to the Penny Arcade Expos. Those are a great example of how cell phones don't work in a highly charged Wi-Fi environment. You go down on the event floor of any PAX Expo, you don't have signal. Even if it says you do, you don't. And that's because every monitor and Wi-Fi router in that place is basically a jammer.
Yeah, you do get a lot of interference. And Bluetooth will be less reliable as well, given the frequency that it operates on with all those routers and signals going around. So the two-way radio thing has been looked at, but there's cost, as Crow had mentioned. So that's why there really isn't a nice option out there. I ride a motorcycle. There happens to be some systems out there for motorcycle riders, and those run several hundred dollars for either one or two headsets, allowing you to have like 8-10 people all in a chain, and being able to talk in a group. And that's probably the best, the most catered to this application that you can find. It's probably the closest thing you can find to a direct application. However, it's still going to be running primarily on Bluetooth, and you're going to run into interference issues in a crowded, congested convention center like that. And it's a lot of money to put down on something that you don't necessarily know that it works all that reliably or not. I'd love to have a better answer for that, but there's just not, unless you want to sink a lot of money in, there's not really a nice high-fidelity option out there.
Mm-hmm.
For the 360 display, again, money.
I don't think anyone's
wrong. And also, practicality. So, turns out, actually, that Mandalore did that one time, where he put a forward-facing camera with infrared and a number of other things, as well as a rear-facing camera, and he had them set up for a screen inside of his helmet, and what he determined was that with the amount that a helmet moves on your head, and with the amount of weight that was added through the necessary power system, that it kind of wasn't worth it, and it actually does damage your visual acuity anytime you're messing with resolutions like that. So, long story short is that basically if you're looking to do it for under $1,000, you could probably do it, but if you're looking to do it for under $200 and do it well, you're going to be having trouble. So it's extremely costly, and the efficacy is limited.
Yeah.
So there's practical concerns.
Again, we can kind of go back to motorcycle helmets, because the idea, and we see it now in cars, the technology to have 360-degree view for parallel parking and whatnot, although I personally kind of think it's a bit of a crutch, and people are going to rely on it too much until it stops, and then when it stops working, they're going to not have such a good day. When it comes to motorcycling, though, it's been an interesting subject. People have tried to have that sort of a thing where they can see behind them on a motorcycle, because motorcyclists get rear-ended quite frequently as a concern, and it would be easier than looking at one of the side mirrors. Now, what they've done, they looked at cameras. That was expensive. The displays, having a nice display very close to your eyes is an expensive thing to do. What some people did do is, in a motorcycle helmet, they actually figured out a way to have a series of mirrors that would allow you to see directly behind you by angling the light over the curvature of your head. That is a low-tech solution, but it's still going to require some pretty solid precision in order to get everything to line up correctly on the optics.
So not as tech as actually, say, mounting mirrors onto maybe the handlebars of the motorcycle.
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And not only that, if you have long hair, that's not really going to work, guys.
Yeah, so, a lot of things don't work.
Well, the other thing, too, is that on that particular helmet, it was fairly noticeable that you had a rear view mirror slot on the back of your head. So for the Mando helmet to try and make that look
in the universe
without just having a pair of eyes in a mirror staring out the back of your helmet, it's going to look a little weird.
Right.
And then you're going to reduce visibility with if you tint it, and then you know trying to look through a series of mirrors through some tint at the back of the helmet, and then trying to get it to look more or less seamless is going to be a very painstaking process for you to do. Now, if you manage to make it work, I will be the first person to congratulate you. The build. But I think it's more in the realm of, hey, that'd be neat, more so than, hey, let's actually do this.
Well, and let's remember, these are generally mostly resin prop helmets that are costumes. It's not like we're really trying to become real-life Mandalorians with the whole heads-up display and everything.
You're not?
Because it's...
And if you are trying to do that, this is not quite the club for you. We are a charity costuming club, guys.
Yes.
We are not starting any colonies in South America. Ask somebody else that story sometime, because I won't respond to the PM. However, we are costumers, and practical concerns are kind of our jam. So, it may be cool, but there's a reason we don't want lightsabers for Mandos, and there's a reason why we consider like these sorts of things with costuming, guys. So, it may be a cool idea.
And just say no to bulletproof armor.
No.
Actually, now that Process said it, the one thing to mind is that if you do manage to get this system so you can see behind you when you're walking around in your helmet, how likely are you going to be nerding out about the fact that you can see behind you and end up walking into something that's directly in front of you? Because I can definitely see a lot of people going, oh, this is so cool, I can see behind me. They pay way more attention to what's behind them than to what's in front of them,
Everything's so clear.
Fantastic vision out the front. It's not horrible like Stormtrooper helmet, but it's not the greatest vision out the front. The last thing you want to do is run over a kid.
Which happens from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're going to do that anyway, so you want to have the smallest number of kid overruns possible.
Yeah.
You know what's cheaper than doing all the heads-up display, look-back, rear-view mirror stuff? Just have a hammer.
Bring around.
Taking off your helmet? You are allowed to take off... Oh, that's a good thing. This will probably be what we wrap with, but... folks in the Mercs, you can take off your helmet, and you are still considered in costume. We're different than the 501st, where they tend to try and keep the appearance of having a Stormtrooper with its helmet on the whole time. Which is... Not to bash the 501st by any means. It's not at all that. I'm a member of 501st and Rebel Legion as well. But with Stormtroopers, that is the character. They have their helmet on. With Mandos, we don't have to have our helmet on the whole time. Whether or not you have some makeup or some prosthetics or some sort of in-universe headgear that's on you when you have your helmet off, that's your call. Mm-hmm. But you can have your helmet off and still be a character. So if you really need to be seeing around you all the time, you can take your helmet off at times. Some people even have belt clips to hang their helmet. And there's always if you're at a convention, we typically have a table where you can rest your helmet, and it makes a great table display while you're walking around without the helmet on.
Just keep in mind that if you are taking your helmet off and you're not wearing special makeup or... a scar or any kind of, headgear or something that makes it truly look like you are still, you still have a costume, if you're pretty much just sweaty and sporting your balaclava. If it's a Mercs event, it's one thing, but if it's someone else's event, like if it's an event that 501st invited us to,
do not be upset if they ask you to put your helmet back on. Sean is right. Absolutely, in our club, we do not require members to keep their helmets on at all times. However, some of the 501st garrisons require that not just for stormtroopers, but for pretty much everybody. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're good family members and we respect their wishes, especially if it's their troop.
Yeah, to be clear, I was just thinking of attendees and other more informal events. The distinction of whether or not helmets are on the whole time is going to very much depend on the event that you're doing. For example, trooping at a Weird Al concert, you don't take the helmet off while you're on stage, or you know, trooping at the movie theaters. Well, these days now, maybe you leave your helmet off. They might ask you to keep your helmet off. But if you're at something where you're supposed to be in character the whole time and they request that you have your helmet on, then you keep your helmet on. But cons and other places where there's more likelihood to walk into and accidentally bump into people, there's nothing saying that you can't keep your helmet off. And real quick, on a medical aspect, don't ever think that you have to keep your helmet on if you're feeling like you can't get enough air in or if you feel like you're overheating.
Breathe once in a while.
Take the helmet off and breathe rather than pass out, because that would be worse.
Yeah.
We don't want your armor getting damaged, and we don't want you getting damaged.
Right.
Oxygen's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think that sums it up.
On the note of don't die.
At least try not to. Try not to die.
Yeah. That is about all we have for this month's edition of Cal Dobby Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. We got a lot in our first one of the year. We'll be having another one next month, obviously. We'll be talking more about Celebration, obviously more about Episode 8. As we get more news for that, obviously going to be more Rebels. Season 3 is only about halfway done at this point, so there's always going to be more of that. And there's always going to be more Mercs news. We never stop, ever.
Amen.
What's up? Stop.
Jinx, whoever that was, I wasn't looking at Skype. Who was that?
Someone who doesn't care.
So that would be Frost.
Yeah, that's Frost. Yeah.
Someone who loves you. I know.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, so again, thank you for listening on behalf of myself, Faxos, Misha, Frost, Dark Hiram, and our new producer, Fen Rule. Again, thanks for joining. Thanks for being on with us.
Happy New Year.
All right, and everybody else, listen
good
next
night,
time.
Good night, everybody, or good day, or wherever, whatever time it is in your little corner of the world.
Stay classy, Coruscant. All right.
Any questions? Give us stuff to talk about. Adios.
And we blame you for a lack of content.
No, we hired Fenrir. Now it's his job.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, sure, this is fun.